Blog Talk Radio.
This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
I am Glenn the Geek from Lexington, Kentucky.
And I'm Jackie Baker from Canton, Ohio, and you are listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for May 11th, 2011, episode 138, sponsored by Back on Track. Good morning, Horse World.
Guess what? It's Wednesday.
Hi, everybody.
Hi, everybody.
We have a show on Wednesday.
It's true.
It's time to go out to the barn. Let him out and work my arm. It's kind of like a meditation. Sort of like yoga, my religion. I get in a trance-like state as I pitch and as I race. The smell of manure and sweet grass hay. What a beautiful way to start your day. I'm 5 foot, but I never feel as tall as when I'm cleaning stalls.
Good morning, everybody. Good morning, Jackie.
Good morning, Glenn.
It's good to have you on. And, of course, Jamie is off in Hawaii, probably right now, up 3 in the morning, so she's not sitting on the beach right now. She's probably just going to bed, though, I would imagine. I'm sure there's no alcohol involved in her trip to Hawaii, her and Chad.
Well, you know what? She can go to Hawaii and do whatever she wants as long as I get to come on and fill in for her on Horses in the Morning.
Okay, well, yes, well, we really appreciate it. Of course, Jackie Baker's our friend from Ohio, who is one of the top bloggers in the horse world. She does the Regarding Horses blog, and it's one that is very popular. And we're just so thrilled that you get to join us. Now, this is not your first time in the co-host chair, but it is your first time in Horses in the Morning co-hosting, but you did a Stable Scoop show with me, if I remember right.
I did, and I remember we got to talk to one of the vets, I believe, from Root and Riddle, talk about all kinds of horsey health stuff, which I think we're doing a little bit again today.
That's right. Today's Wednesday, and we'll be doing some horse health stuff. And, of course, you and I are going to be talking about some things coming up here. So we're going to have some fun, and Jamie will be back next week. I'm sure that in another couple hours she will have her bikini on, showing off all of her bruises from her recent fall. I told her, you know, after the first day, Jackie, when she gets the sunburn, you won't see the bruises anymore. It'll be fine.
Yep, and, you know, those bruises are war wounds for us horse people. It's something we can be kind of proud of.
It's either that or somebody's going to be calling the police on Chad, one or the other.
My horse did it! My horse did it!
You've never had those bruises, have you, Jackie?
Oh, I've had a few of them, and I've actually had that conversation with my husband, you know, when I sport some pretty good, you know, war wounds from my barn time. He actually goes around telling people that he did not do it. It was my horse.
Yeah, we all have to be a little worried about that as horse husbands, for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah.
Well, Jennifer, what's coming up on today's show?
Oh, gee, you caught me off guard.
Sorry. I need a bell or something.
Yeah, you need a bell or something. Well, I can never tell with you, Glenn. You know, it's like herding ducks. On today's show, Glenn and Jamie, or Jamie. Hi, Jamie.
Hi, this is Jackie. Nice to meet you.
Glenn and Jackie open up by chatting with Shauna Koresh on how to keep your schooling sessions fresh and fun.
We're not going to let her talk much today.
No. Following up, we will have our usual Wednesday horse health segment from Christy, Dr. Jones, and thehorse.com. And if I don't blow up my computer before we get past the 9:25 hour, we're going to have lots of great fun news stories, headlines, and chit-chat. Yeah, I'm going to go get dynamite now.
You can go back to fighting with your computer now. Thank you very much. My first Daily Winnie today is to all those honest horse folks who posted about falling off yesterday. We did a little talk yesterday about Jamie and her tumble. And Jamie wanted to be assured that she was not the only one that's fallen off recently. Wanted to help her ego a bit. And, boy, you guys responded. There were like 25 comments on there from people who had fallen off recently and some really interesting ones. So if you missed that, go to our Horses in the Morning page and you can find that conversation along with the conversation about the kitties that our stray barn cat had and how cute they were. But I wanted to call out one person in particular, Ron Sandler, who also posted on the falling off thread, who said there are two kinds of riders, those that have fallen and those that will. Just love that. That just says it all right there, doesn't it, Jackie?
It does. I love what Ron said. Actually, I can, you know, sense a blog post in the making from hearing that. And I kind of had that makes a great topic. But my boss's 10-year-old daughter is taking riding lessons. And every time she comes in with them, she comes up to me and tells me how proud she is because she hasn't fallen off yet. And I'm just like, you know what, Katie? In the horse world, that's not something to be proud of. Everybody knows you have to fall off 7 times before you can be considered a good rider.
7 times? Either that or you're
7
dead.
Times.
One of the
That's the rule. That's the rule.
And one of those is going to involve the cast, guaranteed. You know,
you know what? I don't know about that because I've definitely got my 7 falls in and knock on some serious wood for me, but I have yet to have anything worse than a couple of bruises.
Well, you know, I think they should make home plaster of Paris kits for horse people. Where you just, you know, you can just put your own cast on. Yeah, you just do it yourself, cast kit. I think that would be appropriate.
There you go. Then you can just go right back to mucking stalls, right?
That's right. That's right. Hey, I have another Daily Winnie before you do yours. This one goes out to Wendy Ying, who we're going to have on the Stable Scoop show a little bit later today. She is the fiance of Sterling, who gave me my really cool birthday gift. I got to drive a four-in-hand team of Hackney ponies. And Wendy is his fiance and is also a four-in-hand competition driver, one of the very few ladies that do that. So we're going to have Wendy on the Stable Scoop show this week, and we're recording that a little bit later. So and Wendy was apparently instrumental in making sure that that all happened on my birthday, my big surprise. So I know Wendy said she's listening this morning. So howdy, Wendy. And the other thing I didn't know about Wendy is that she is a DBM. She's a doctor and also practices some Chinese medicine as well. So we're going to talk to her about that too. So, Wendy, we're looking forward to chatting with you later and maybe going out to dinner with you guys sometime next week. That'll be fun. Now it's your turn, Jackie.
Well, I thought it was just appropriate as a blogger to send my Daily Winnie out to a fellow blogger. And this is one that I've discovered recently. Her name is Kate, and she runs a blog called A Year with Horses at ayearwithhorses.blogspot.com. And this morning I saw her most recent post, which is about ticks. And I have a strong stomach with horses, but this kind of grosses me out. This is what she wrote. She said, "We seem to have gone directly from early, cold, wet spring into high summer. It's in the upper 70s and sunny, and I'm not complaining. With the heat, though, come the bugs. The ticks have exploded. I got at least 8 off Pie this morning when I brought him in to ride. Most were in his tail. I have to pick around in there and examine the tailbone to find them. Gross. I don't live in an area that has ticks. I've been in western Pennsylvania and northeast Ohio my whole life, and I've only found a tick on my horse once last fall. I thought it was a scab. I went to pull it off, and there were little legs wiggling. Totally grossed me out. So my Daily Winnie is for all of those people who live in tick country and have to deal with this on a daily basis."
Well, you know, it's interesting you say that because we do live in tick country, and most of the country now is tick country, so it is something you have to deal with. And, of course, I had, you know, most people that listen to the show for a long time know that I had a bad bout with Lyme disease for a matter of a couple of years and still fight it. And, of course, many horses have. But there was a story yesterday, you just reminded me of this, and I just looked it up quick. And the title of this story, you're going to love this. You talk about grossing me out, guys. Well, this is where I can get Jackie. A tiny enemy vampire tick, enemy vampire ticks are draining region's moose of blood. And that was the title of the story, so of course that made me want to read it. And it says that apparently moose up in New Hampshire are having a problem. They're finding a lot of dead ones. And they're saying yearlings and under are dying from tick infestations. And this year is particularly bad because of all the rain and the moisture. And it says regular year, get this, this is going to gross you out. In a regular year, can have up to 30,000 ticks on a single moose.
Oh, I am never moving to wherever that is.
New Hampshire.
Ever.
So now, and I know that out at our barn this year, we've been picking ticks off. It's been pretty common this year. So, and it has a lot to do with the moisture in the winter and all of that kind of thing. But it's been a huge problem in New Hampshire with the moose population. You don't think about deer and moose, and of course that deer ticks are where Lyme disease comes from. And deer ticks are very tiny. You don't they're actually hard to see. they're not like your big fat ticks that you found there. Jennifer's the expert. I don't do ticks ever since I had Lyme disease really bad. I can't stand ticks. And Jennifer's the one that ends up pulling them out. She's the expert at tick pulling. So how do you do it, Jennifer, and actually get the whole thing out? Yeah.
Well, yeah, Jen, I need your help on this. I've only found one tick on a horse in over 20 years.
I can't believe that.
I know, the wee teeny ones that carry Lyme, they're very small, so you're supposed to use tweezers to get the little bottom part of them. And you actually very rarely come across them on a horse, mostly because they are so small. You really just don't see them. They're like the point of a pencil. The big, fat, honking ones that have the white decorations on their back, they're the ones you usually see on horses, and when they get themselves attached, they'll explode into this giant, blood-filled, disgusting thing. I just grab those suckers and rip them out. I'm sure there's some medical person somewhere that's going, oh, my God!
That causes
Lyme is tricky to get out, and you're supposed to use tweezers because you have to get right at the base of the skin to pull them out. Some people say you touch it with a cigarette end and all this kind of stuff. I never got into the whole exotic thing. We just use tweezers and pull them out.
Yeah, I can't say that I tend to have cigarettes on hand, so I might have to add some tweezers to my first aid kit.
We're actually doing a special episode of Stable Scoop coming up on ticks and Lyme disease. So we're going to do that coming up in Stable Scoop. I'm trying to line up the guests now and talk about this because it is a very serious topic, and it affects a lot of horses in the country. And I know the Northeast is an area that's huge. I'm actually surprised, Ohio, you don't have a worse. You have mosquitoes the size of elephants up there.
And we get lots of bugs, lots of no-see-ums and that kind of stuff. But like I said, the tick I've only found once, and it was embedded right on the top of poor Ace's pole.
That's one of their favorite spots. They like manes and tails. They want to get buried deep down in there. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's where you'll find them on humans, too, because, you know, they try and get in your hair and, you know, underneath your socks is a good spot for them, too. They crawl under your socks.
Oh.
Jackie's never coming back, Jennifer.
Never. No.
I'm just never going to the Northeast, or I'll just stay right here in Ohio where we don't ever see ticks. Well,
yeah, you know, the good news, though, Jackie, is the new spot-on fly treatments they make for horses now are pretty darned effective for keeping ticks off your horse.
Oh,
yeah, have you ever used the spot-on stuff, Jackie, or do you just use fly spray?
I haven't.
I usually just
do fly spray.
Yeah, it's
about,
pretty
like,
good
I know
stuff,
somebody who uses Equispot. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, there's about six
brand.
Or seven different brands, but Equispot is one of
them,
yeah.
Okay.
They just, most of the brands are the same thing with a different carrier, which changes the price and stuff like that. And if you want to keep, like, flies off his face while you're riding and that kind of stuff, pretty mediocre, you know, doesn't do all that great. But for keeping ticks off of them and keeping them from getting those little midge bites on their bellies that make them so itchy, extremely effective for those two things. Yeah. And I'm all about not having to pull ticks off. It's disgusting.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey,
and
Jennifer,
I
was just going to say, Rick Conley just posted on our Facebook page, putting a drop of Dawn dish soap on the tick will cause them to let go and back out so you can grab them. I don't know that one, Rick.
Ooh,
Jennifer, can you post on Facebook and have everybody put their, how they get ticks off, have everybody post their tricks for removing ticks, and we'll see what some of them are before the end of the show here. Well, Jackie, we'll get off of that topic. I'm sure that thehorse.com is going to be giving us some gross stuff to talk about later. But I know that you actually worked, and it's something that we've covered a little bit here on the morning show, and that's the collegiate association and all the colleges that have riding teams and stuff. But they just had a finals this past weekend here in Lexington, didn't they?
They did. There are a couple of different branches of intercollegiate competition organizations and whatnot, but the one that just had their national competition was the IHSA, which stands for Intercollegiate Horse Show Association, which is a really, really cool thing. It's actually something I grew up with. My mom was an assistant coach for an IHSA team at a small college in our area, and so as a preteen teenager, I actually got to ride in their practices, which was kind of cool. But then help around with the shows. And they have a really interesting way that they run these shows. And instead of a typical show where, you know, you have a horse that you ride and train in school and then take to a show, the riders from the different colleges go to one of the host schools, which is in their region, who provides the horses for the students to ride. And they go and they actually draw their horses out of a hat. They ride at different levels. They've got novice, intermediate, open classes. They do jumps. They do flat. And there are a specific set of horses assigned to each class based on level. So the harder to ride horses, obviously, would be in the open and advanced classes. And the easy schoolmasters would be novice. And so they actually draw their horses out of a hat. They have maybe a very short description about the horse, you know, a few key things to know about that horse, whether or not they can use a crop with it. They get ribbons braided into their tail. So a horse that, you know, kicks or gets kind of grumpy gets a red. One that, you know, has a sticky left lead, I think, got a yellow. One that had a sticky right lead got a green, you know, some different signals like that.
They color code the horses?
Yeah, they color code the horses so that you know, because you don't really know a lot about the horse that you're getting on, and you don't get to do any warm-up time. They have all the horses gathered outside the ring. You're allowed to get on about 5 minutes before your class, before you go into the ring to adjust your stirrups, and you have to go straight from mounting into the ring, do your course of jumps, opening circle, course, closing circle, and you're out. No warm-up, no test jumps, nothing. And unless you're the host school, you have an advantage as the host school because it's your horses. But if it's not you're not hosting, you're getting on a horse you've likely never been on before, going straight into the ring, doing your course, and coming right back out. It's craziness and very cool. But it was a lot of fun for me because somebody had to warm up those horses. And the students from the school aren't allowed to do it or they can get disqualified. And so we used to, you know, get up super early in the morning and get to go out and warm up over jumps, five or six horses, which was always kind of fun. I always thought that was the better end of the deal than the showing anyway. So it's a really cool format. And then they earn points in their classes and they can actually level up. So once you get to a certain amount of points in novice, you can move up to intermediate. But then they have, you know, a whole system. You have a region that you compete with, and you go to several shows a semester against your region. If you earn enough points, you make it. I think the next one is zones. If you do well at zones, I forget if there's another step or if you go straight to nationals. But depending on points and how well you do, you can end up at the IHSA national show. And that's what was this past weekend down in Lexington. They had the nationals. And it looks like Centenary College, located in Hackettstown, New Jersey, took the Team Hunt Seat Championship. You earn points as individuals, but then you also earn points as your team. So big congratulations out to the Centenary College students who won for their Hunt Seat Championship at Nationals this weekend.
Wow, and it looks like they also give an individual award, and the individual winner was Marissa Cohen, also from Centenary. How do you say that?
Centenary.
Centenary. Thank you. Thank you. They also do Western too, don't they, Jackie?
They do. Yeah, they have Western classes. And it looks like on the Western side, Berry College of Northwest Georgia brought home the team championship. And also a Berry rider, Alexandra Jones, was second in the high point standings, and Rebecca Irish of Illinois Blackhawk College came out on top in the Western side. And Jen actually asked a good question. She said, are they equitation classes? Yes. They're all judged on equitation, so the rider's form and how well they ride and navigate the course, navigate their classes. Because obviously you're not training the horse, so they can't do a working hunter or, you know, a Western pleasure where they're judging on the horse specifically.
Do they do flat classes and over fences?
Yes. Everybody at the show gets to compete in two classes. There's open, intermediate, novice for flat and for jumping. So everybody does a flat and everybody does a jumping. But then they
only two classes?
Have, yeah, only two classes. So
you do all that crap for two classes?
Yeah. Yeah, you do one in each yeah, in your division. Or if you don't jump, they actually, and I don't know if they do this at nationals or not, but at least at the regional shows, they actually have walk trot and walk trot canter only classes. So you could go to just one class.
You know what I found? You know what I found amazing about this is there are 376 colleges and universities in the United States and Canada that have equestrian teams. I didn't know it was that many.
Yeah. Yeah, and some of the big schools do them. You know, in my area, Penn State has an equestrian team that I think they have between 40 and 60 riders on that team, and you actually have to audition to get in, and it's very competitive. Ohio State has one. They focus a little more on the Western side. And then all kinds of the small schools around here do as well. So it ranges from your really big, huge state schools way down to small, you know, private schools that only have 1,500 students.
Wow. Well, there you go. I now know more about intercollegiate horse showing than I ever did. Thank you for that. I have something I want to tell you about, too, because it's new in England, and England always does the cool stuff first. And it is the National Hearse of the Year Show. Yep, you heard it right. Apparently, horse-drawn hearses for funerals are becoming increasingly popular again this year in England. 6% rise from last year. There's 6% more hearse-drawn funerals. And so that led the organizers of this horse show to want to do a hearse class. So because apparently funeral horses are, you know, they take them quite seriously and they're well-trained and blah, blah, blah. So they decided to do a hearse class. Now, it's not a speed competition. I know all of you had this picture. You had the picture of the chuck wagons running around the arena at full speed, and you were picturing a hearse, a funeral hearse back there. But that's not how they do it. It's actually a dressage type of class where you go in and it's all walk, trot, and all of that pretty stuff, only you're towing a hearse carriage. Now, what I found very interesting about this article is not that they're having a hearse dressage competition, which, you know, some horse husbands would claim that they're just about dying watching dressage as it is, but that horse-drawn funerals apparently do not always go smoothly. At a recent funeral in Lambeth, England, and that's in South London, the horses bolted, dragging a coffin 75 meters, leaving mourners horrified as the coffin tipped over. The hearse's groom suffered a broken arm when she was thrown to the ground during the incident. So imagine now, you're at mom's funeral or grandma's funeral or Auntie Ellie's funeral, and it's all pretty and being drawn by horses, and you just get to the cemetery, to the gravesite, and the horses bolt and take mom for a wild ride. And apparently mom actually tipped over. So there's a scene that
open when she tipped over.
It doesn't say that, but you got it. You just sort of picture it, don't you? Isn't that what came to your mind first?
You do. Exactly. Yeah.
So I think they left. You figure that the mourners were horrified that the coffin came open, but you think they'd have them sealed somehow, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
In any case, mom took one last wild ride. Let me tell you, she went out kicking and screaming.
What a way to go.
Sorry, it probably wasn't funny, but when you read it back, it's kind of a chuckle.
Yeah.
It is
good.
Yeah. Hey, something else, too, that an article I found, Jackie, and it led me to just think about, you know, I think we've had this discussion once before, but there was a horse, and a dressage horse, that was in a barn fire in central Pennsylvania, and it was a bad barn fire. Apparently, they managed to get like four of the five of the horses out. This was an 11-year-old Oldenburg mare, and one of the witnesses to the fire said they saw a horse bolting from the barn on fire, and found out later that when they finally found these horses who had taken off and left for, you know, parts unknown, that it was this horse that was actually on fire when it went out of the barn. It had 70% burns over its body. Well, the veterinarians and the owner decided to save the horse, and the good news about this story is the horse is doing very well, and his healing and you know, getting back to normal, actually. But it cost her nearly $18,000 because they had to do skin grafts and multiple surgeries and, you know, things that they have to do for burned anybody, person that's burned or horses that are burned or any animal. And, of course, antibiotics and all of that kind of stuff. And the really good news at the end of this story is that they are now using her story for burn victims in children's burn units and things like that. They're using this horse as an example that you can't overcome. So it's, you know, the whole thing's turning out to be a really good thing in the end. But it leads me to the question is, how much money would you spend to save your horse? Now, you have a great horse. Tell us a little bit about your horse.
I do. I have the most wonderful horse. His name is Ace. And actually, I renamed him because his registered name is Ace Brown, which is just totally dumb. So I picked out a new show name, and it's Winsome Ace. And if you look up Winsome, it means sweetly and innocently charming, which just describes him really well. But he's also really smart. He has everybody in the barn totally bamboozled because he gets treats out of everybody. It's ridiculous. He hangs his head out of his stall, and every time another horse is getting a treat, he gives them these really sweet begging eyes and kind of nickers at them. Everybody gives this horse treats. I'm having no trouble keeping weight on my thoroughbred because he just gets it out of everybody. It's pretty hilarious. But he's really sweet, really, really fun horse. And I just love him to death. $18,000.
Yeah, so now, but it still leads to the question, you know, if it was going to be a major event. And, you know, I guess what it comes down to is not only would you do it, is could you afford to do it? You know, how would you afford to do it?
I'm pretty sure at $18,000 I would be picking between my horse and my husband. And I got to say, I'm one of those horse women, I actually would keep my husband. And not just because I'm going to make him listen to this later. But
glad to hear that.
Really
he's going to be listening later for sure.
Yeah. If it really came down to it, I don't know. But that would be so hard. I mean, the one thing that jumped out at me in this article is she says that, you know, they took her to New Bolton Center and that I was allowed in to see her in the intensive care unit. I couldn't recognize her. But when I walked through the door and called her name, she nickered at me. And that's the hard thing with horses. I feel like as horse women, horse owners, we have this kind of sixth sense that we can tell when they're either ready to let go or they still want to fight and hang on. And I think if my horse was looking at me and nickered at me and wanted to fight and wanted to try, I would have a hard time saying no, no matter what the cost.
I totally agree with you. I think I think you would have been a little pile of goo on the floor right beside your horse.
Yeah.
We had the same thing with, you know, with our greyhound that you had met, Bam Bam, and our greyhound was starting to get old and starting to fail a little bit. And I said, you know, how do you know when it's time? And we had a friend who just said to us, she'll tell you when it's time. And sure enough, the day we put her down, she came around the corner and looked at us, and she gave me that look that said, okay, I'm done fighting now. And that was it. We took her to the vet that day. I just knew in the look in her face that that was the day.
Yep.
So very interesting. It is an interesting conversation about that. And, you know, I guess it sort of also depends on everybody's circumstances and where you're at. And I don't think you can judge people either for what they do decide, whether it's one way or the other, because it's what you're dealing with at that particular time. Well, let's take a break for our first commercial here. Back on Track is our sponsor today. And when we come back from the commercial, we're going to have Shauna Koresh on with us. She joins us on a regular basis here talking about training. Jackie, one of the things that you cover a lot on your Regarding Horses blog at regardinghorses.com is training. It's one of the things you're a lower-level rider who struggles like everybody else does training their horse. And I know that you have some things you want to talk to Shauna about, so we're going to get to that right after this commercial with Back on Track. Well, I had a chance to catch up with Bo from Back on Track Products, our title sponsor for today, and talk about one of his really neat products, and that is the mesh sheet from Back on Track. Well, hi, Bo, and welcome to Horses in the Morning. It's good to finally have you on.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Well, you know, we do appreciate you being a sponsor here on Wednesdays at Horses in the Morning. And I wanted to talk to you today about one product that I know is very popular, and that's the mesh sheet. I wanted to ask you, why do you think we see so many top barns using this product?
I think it's for they can see at the result that the product really works, and that's not only the mesh sheet, but it's all the products.
But the mesh sheet in particular, you know, is one that I do see. I see people coming up to you at shows when you're there and people buying it. So what does the mesh sheet do to help all these professionals and amateurs alike?
They increase blood circulation, and that helps the muscles to stay loose. And the horses is more loose and happy and more supple when the riders get on them. But it feels almost like the horse are being warmed up. I used to compare it to almost like a nightly massage.
How long do you have to wear it? This is one of the questions I've always had, is how long do you have to wear it to start seeing the beneficial effects? How long does it have to be on there?
In the summer, people use it for 30 minutes and say to see effect. I would say to get the best effect, you leave it overnight, but obviously in summer it's too hot. But people use it before and after the ride, and they say to see a difference.
Now, is this only for a horse that has problems? I know as horse owners, we always think about situations when they come up and you actually have a problem. But is it also for preventative? Do you use it all the time?
Yeah, most people use it like preventative. They really help any kind of horse, sound or lame or sore back or cold back. They just get them that little bit extra massage over the night, like I said.
So, yeah, and so it's like I get my massage once a month, whether I need it or not. It's kind of the same thing.
Yeah. I mean, and this is a daily thing, so it's really helped the horse's well-being.
Well, I know you have a lot of professional riders as well as amateur riders out there using the mesh sheet, and we can find that at backontrackproducts.com along with all the other products, and we'll be going over a couple of those in the weeks to come. Bo, we appreciate you being here, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Yeah, thank you.
You are listening to Horses in the Morning from May 11, 2011. I am Jackie Baker from regardinghorses.com, and I am filling in for Jamie, who is sunning herself on the beaches of Hawaii today. Hopefully you're having a great time, Janie. I am having fun filling in for you. Right now, we have Shauna Koresh on the line from OnTargetTraining.com. I actually got to meet Shauna a couple of months ago, and we just hit it off because we totally got to geek out talking on horse training type stuff. Shauna is kind of the originator of clicker training for horses. She actually used to be a trainer for SeaWorld, working with the animals, which I think is way cool because I grew up going to SeaWorld in Aurora, Ohio, and I hate roller coasters, so it was my favorite amusement park in the whole world. And she took a lot of the concepts that she used with the animals there and uses them with horses, which works really, really well. And I know she's got a new horse called Bug. She's been tracking her training with him online and doing videos, and it's been great fun to see all of the kinds of things that they're talking about. So today we are going to talk with Shauna about changing up training to avoid boredom. Good morning, Shauna.
Well, good morning, Jackie. It's nice to hear your voice here this morning.
It is so nice to have you on. I am so looking forward to talking with you today. So tell us, what are some tricks you have up your sleeve for changing up your training regime?
Well, you know, it's funny you mention this because it really comes you know, it's Bugs is who brings all my stuff to light right now. And he's, you know, he's a green horse. And, you know, as green horses go, at first you kind of like the routine a little bit. It helps them to kind of, you know, when they start off not knowing anything, it helps them. But very quickly you recognize that, you know, he's anticipating what I'm doing. You know, I would have a tendency to walk, trot, canter. And, you know, and then I would go from the trot and I would just do an upward transition. He's like, we're going to canter. You know, it's just all the little things. So I find the best thing to do is really just try to keep them on their toes, because the more they're paying attention and the more you can stimulate them, the more well-rounded they become. So there's all kinds of things you can do to kind of keep them on their toes and keep them paying attention and keep them bright and involved. And I find if you go about it really at a pace where you allow them to process, you know, and you can use the positive reinforcement to help them realize that new things are good and things. So the more you do that, the more I find that they are stimulated and paying attention and that they're more adept to change. You know, like with a young horse, he has so much to learn ahead of him that you want him to relish and take in change and not get sullen or sulky because he doesn't know what's happening next or this isn't my routine. So I start even just with simple things. I mean, it can just go on, and we'll try and cite some different things that maybe can get people thinking. But, of course, I tend to go back to my world.
Yeah.
So you kind of got to broaden that a little bit. But the like one of the things I do is just riding to the arena. I mean, Bugs is learning to be a hunter-jumper, but I think that it's really important to balance that out and not everything be the same. So, like, even just doing things like riding to the ring, there's a certain way we tend to go down one side of the hill to the arena, and then we ride, and then we come back up the other side. So sometimes what I try to do is take him down the – go backwards, you know, go down the way we normally come home, or maybe walk him around the arena first, or walk him around the grounds first before going right to the arena. So breaking up even as simple as the way I get to the arena. And then, but another thing you can do, too, is breaking up, because this is another thing frankly, I find I'm the one that falls into it as much as anybody, and so I have to point it out to myself. But, like, I had a tendency to walk each direction, trot each direction, canter each direction, and we tend to stay on the rail. You know, it's just all these habits that we get into. So really mixing it up by what I do when I'm in the arena, starting off doing other things, maybe work him, get him warmed up before I get there, you know, like have him, you know, lunge a little bit or on the walker for a little bit so we have some of the workout, the working up to being warmed up, taken care of, and then take him to the ring and get on to, you know, right away get to trotting or right away get to cantering or mixing it up, doing circles and serpentines. And, like, I have to tell you, the first time, you know, you start to take him down the ring in the wrong direction, or you start to – he also learned, this was a habit of mine, that at first when we first started jumping, that as soon as we turn into the ring, you saw him looking for jumps. You know what I mean? Like, so in the center of the ring, he started going, where is it? Which one am I going to? So just trying to mix it up and getting it. And so immediately sometimes when you introduce new things, I'll see his head come up, like, what is this about? Where is this? This isn't our routine. But it's a good thing, you know, because it's not, he has learned to, with the reinforcement, as soon as he settles a little bit, I can click and reward him for his good attitude about our new behavior. So that's kind of some of just breaking up our patterns when it comes to the routine and that I tend to do in the ring. But also I think it's really important to introduce new challenges, just other things altogether. Like my goal is jumping and getting him to be better about arena work and jumping and more, you know, all the things that go with that. But then I realize that, you know, he needs to get out on the trail. He needs to work in different areas. He needs to not do the same routine. And just because he's not, you know, maybe a trail horse, you know, per se as a career, it doesn't mean I can't work on getting him to walk over obstacles, to get him to walk on a tarp, to get him to learn how to stand and open a gate with the exercises that go with that, and certainly the trail, you know, and I look for things on the trail. I love water crossings, which are challenged, you know, but the things I can do to help him to be more well-rounded in that environment. But it also goes even more. I'm just chatting my little head off, aren't I?
You are.
And it's like 6-something in the morning here. But the other thing that you can even do is just changing up the routine when you're getting them ready. You know, I will, sometimes instead of a full-on getting them groomed, just tack them up and get on. Or instead of, the whatever routine you might have, do it backwards, or do it in a different place. Get them ready in a stall versus the cross ties, or take, just as much as you can mix it up as possible. I find the more that they are well-rounded, the more balanced, and the more open they are to change and looking for change. But more importantly, I think it helps them to start paying attention to you. You know, as I first would take them in, when I would first, because at first I used the routine as a bit of a, comfort zone for him in training. But then as you start doing things, like instead of going from the trot to the canter, if I asked to trot again, you could feel he was wanting to go into the canter. He was just waiting for me to go to the canter. So to get him to settle back into the trot, and to kind of resign to going, okay, I guess we really are just trotting. And then you can reinforce him for that so he gets willing to so they become willing and apt to do that. Sorry, I had a little interruption there. My dog is going for surgery this morning. My friend just fed her a treat.
I love your point about using the mixing it up to get your horse to pay attention to you. That's something I see all the time, or even with my horse, that, they get focused on something outside of the arena, whether it's just a distraction or whether it's something that's scaring them, but by putting him to work and making him ask him, do something that he's not used to, just really, kind of gets him focused again, and it gets him paying attention to me, but also gets him to be less worried about what's going on elsewhere.
So I have a question. I have a question. Me. Well, those of us who have our horses at public stables, there's always a wide variety of interests and skill sets and confidence levels. Shauna, could you give an example of, let's set the base here. We have a horse with a good level of training, your typical nice, quiet, great beginner's horse.
Mm-hmm.
And the owner of this horse is your classic human that should be owning a good beginner's horse. It's an advanced beginner, but doesn't have a lot of training experience and wants to take advantage of maybe changing some things up. So every day, Charlotte goes out and rides her horse. She tacks him up on the cross tie. She takes him out to the mounting block. She climbs aboard, walks to the arena, does the usual walk, trot, canter, and then hacks back to the barn. What would be something for that particular skill and interest set to try changing? Should she try changing part of her get ready routine? Should she try changing part of her warm up routine? What would be a good place to start for somebody like that who really doesn't have any training skills, just riding skills?
And I think first thing I would do is maybe just mix up the walk is always a safe place to start mixing things up, because once you get, if a horse goes, no, I walk, trot, canter, and then you start getting into something at the canter that, is harder than to contain or get back. But I would say start things at the walk. So while maybe you have a tendency to walk on the rail to warm up, or you walk in a particular part of the arena, if that person would maybe start doing serpentines. But then, start doing a serpentine to warm up, and then do a circle, and then go back to the serpentine. So simply just changing the bend, and in a little bit more of an unpredictable pattern, because you'll find quickly, if you start going with serpentine, they're like, oh, I get it. I bend, then we turn, then we turn, But if you start going, but this time we're going to stay on the circle. Now we're going to go back to serpentining. Now we're going to go circle the other direction. So even simple things like that, or even leaving the arena and coming back into the arena, and then continuing.
It's amazing how many horses balk at that.
Jennifer's done that. Hey, I've seen Jennifer do that many times involoventarily, leaving the arena and coming back.
Hey.
and and that can be a hard one because some horses, that means we're done, and they get that sense of entitlement that kind of like how Jackie was saying, we don't want them to have that sense of entitlement and also the paying attention going up as a part of that. And you know what the sideline to this is, and this is something that Jackie touched on, is the more they're paying attention to us, the less they're paying attention to looking for trouble or what's going on around them. They're busy going, what does my human want now, you know, and what can I do? And I want to pay attention because it's kind of fun and stimulating. I think we spend so much time, I mean, you hear lots and lots of things where we pay so much attention and time to their physical well-being, you know, what kind of wormers, what kind of, you know, feed, what kind of wraps, what kind of, you know, all the things we do on a physical basis, but we forget a lot how much mental there is going. There's very smart animals, and I know people a lot of times balk at that, you know, but it is so true. I think the traditional training doesn't really engage them as much as they like to be engaged. So I find that
on that mental note, I was just thinking, you know, we talk a lot about mixing it up for these horses, but I also know that horses are all really different. And there are some horses who are kind of that play mentality that always want you to be doing something different and always need something to focus on. But, like, my horse, if I don't just let him walk around the arena in circles, walk, trot, canter a little bit both directions, you know, without asking much, he tends to actually get really upset. He always wants that little bit of a warm-up before I start asking him. So I kind of warm him up and then do it. And, you know, some horses can even get explosive if you ask them to do too much. What are some signals when you're pushing a horse too hard and maybe you've mixed it up a little too much?
Yeah, and, you know, that's a good point because you don't want to – I mean, some horses, if you haven't done this and they are used to their – and this is kind of where I was seeing it with – there's another gal that's on the green horse and we're bringing our green horses along together. And you can see with the green horse training, you things get more difficult. You know, you're adding in new things. So they go, okay, I know my world. And all of a sudden you go, no, no, now we're doing this. So like, what? I don't – so sometimes it can be like it can be disturbing to them. And I never want it to be – I don't want you to go toe-to-toe with your horse. You know what I mean? If you're really reaching resistance, like you're seeing that the ears are going back or the head raises high. I mean, even sometimes when I just change my path to something, I'll see Bugs lift his head a little bit. It's not completely alarmed, but it's enough where he's like going, this isn't what we normally do. So if you feel that, look for use things that can be familiar to help bring them back to a place of comfort. You know, like I work on Bugs a lot with bending and you know, kind of keeping bending one direction, bending the other, lowering his head. And so it's kind of a comfort zone for him. So if if we're going out and doing something, I feel like his head comes up a little bit, I can bring him back to something that's familiar that we've done in the ring. But if you start to feel like you have super resistance going on, you feel like your horse's head's coming too high, it's not like, oh, this is slightly different, but it's like, uh-oh, I might be in trouble. I don't know what this is worrying me. You try to go back to something kind of familiar and take a smaller step. You know, maybe it's, you know, something, you know, maybe you've decided to take this other path to the ring and it's really got him a little worried. We'll give him something to focus on, but maybe start with something in the ring that's just a little less change, because they have to learn how to become open to change and looking forward to it. And I use positive reinforcement a lot. So as I go along and I see, you know, Bugs going, wait, we always canter now, and he's all tight and trying to get to the canter, and I'm going, oh, I want a nice slow trot. You know, as soon as I feel him kind of resign himself to the trot, I also use the reinforcement because I want that willingness and that softness when he goes, okay, whatever you want to do, and that does help him as well. But if you start to see your horse putting up a fight, ears start going back and looking cranky, you start to feel too much hesitancy, try to break it down to smaller steps and let him just kind of build on it. Maybe it's just a, you know, a little bit bigger circle to get him comfortable, whatever that might be. There's so many places I can't even begin to think of all of the examples that I would give you for that. But you definitely don't want it to be a fight. You want it to be something that is willing. And if you haven't done anything like that, it just may startle him a little bit. So go a little slow and try something a little less the next time.
Donna, what are some things you can do outside of the arena to mix it up. Like, it's been really nice, and my arena at my barn tends to be really busy, so I've been riding out a lot lately, and I know I and probably a lot of other people, when we trail ride or hack out, get in the habit of just kind of riding on the buckle and taking it easy. But at the same time, every time we're in the saddle is a training opportunity. Do you have any good suggestions for something we can do riding out to kind of mix it up?
Yes, and, you know, I think that's a great idea. I mean, there's times when I go out on the trail that I want to be on the buckle, and I want to say, this is your time to take in the world, you know, as long as they feel safe with, you know, you feel like they're going to be sensible about that. But it is time for you to look right, look left, do whatever you kind of want to do. But it is also, it's a great place to work on getting them with some of your arena, you know, tools that you do, whether it's bending and collecting and picking up the reins. I would still kind of try to do some of both of those things. But I find if you can get them on the trail listening to you and going and doing what they do in the arena, it is a terrific place for stepping up. Because then you're putting in two things. You're not just saying, oh, relax, look around at the trail and all the things that the world you don't normally see, but you're saying, okay, now we have all these the stimuli around us that is a challenge and draws your focus to, but you're saying, let's get together and work a little bit and do some of our, you know, our routine and our practices. So I think that's a great tool. I mean, you always want to be aware of your footing, so it's not you just want to go cantering down, you know, some rocky path or anything, but you can do things like a little bit of collection and a little bit of bending. And then when they're good again, you can soften and give them the reins back and let them kind of look around. So I think that's a great place to challenge them. And you can also, just doing some sessions outside of just simply riding. You know, we have a tendency to get on and we ride and then we put them away and we're done. But you can also teach them a lot of things. You know, you can do some of the little spookiness exercises or teach them to lift their feet on their own, and you can take them and do things with them outside of just the riding, which also is a big stimulation for them and a big change in their routine.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea, Shauna. Well, on that note, I think we're going to have to wrap it up for today, but there were a lot of fantastic suggestions, and I'm really glad that it's a pretty day here in Northeast Ohio so that I can hopefully get out and ride and be a little bit more attentional about what I do with my horse. So thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. It's been great, as always, to be here, and really nice to talk with you, Jackie.
Great to talk with you, too. And that was Shauna Koresh from On Target Training, and you can visit her website at on-target-training.com.
Wow, you did great. Holy cow, you're a talk show host in the making. This is terrific. I don't have to do anything.
I'm all about modeling. All about modeling. Just listening to
I did learn something, though, while you guys were talking about training. Because I sit on an exercise ball, you know, when doing the shows, I say that often at the beginning of the show, on the ball. Well, it doesn't mean I'm really on the ball. It means I'm sitting on a ball. Well, I learned something while you guys were doing that, and that is it's very dangerous when you sit on an exercise ball to try and tie your shoelace at the same time. Yeah, I learned the hard way that you end up on the floor if you're not really thinking about it, and you try and tie your shoelace when you're sitting on an exercise ball. There's some training tips for you. Personally, I'm okay, if anybody's concerned, which I'm sure you're not. I'm all right. I didn't hit anything.
You didn't
important.
Land on Beast, did you?
Well, that's the other thing that caused the problem while you were doing that segment, is the cat has this habit of wanting to lay right underneath my feet. And then he gets mad when you step on him, you know, because you don't know he's down there. He just lays right where your feet go. So when you're sitting on an exercise ball, having your feet positioned in proper places is important because you'll fall off if you don't. So I go to put my foot down, the cat screams, and I just about tip off my ball that time. So I've had a very bad ball day today. Just thought I'd bring that up.
That sounds like a booby trap to me, Glenn. It kind of sounds like he planned that.
I just heard a story, Jackie, this morning on the news that some guy was lifelined to the hospital after his house cat tore into him. Was so bad. This cat attacked him so bad that he had to be lifelined to the hospital. So that's our cat. One day he's going to turn on us like that. There's a reason he has the name The Beast. Well,
you know, if he ever needs a vacation just to take a mental break and get away from it all, you can always send him to my house to visit for a week or two.
He will torture your other cats. He will eat them alive. There will be little piles of fur just laying there. Well, you know, we do a song every day, and I asked you what song you'd like to hear today, so tell everybody which one you wanted.
We are listening to Templeton Thompson's When I Get That Pony Road, and this one's for you, Jamie. When I Get That Pony Road, and you can find all of her music at templetonthompson.com, and we encourage you to stop over there and buy as much as you can to support our artists that actually sing horsey songs. And you're listening to Horses in the Morning. I am Glenn the Geek, and I am here with Jackie Baker of the Regarding Horses blog, and she's filling in today for Jamie, who's off on vacation. She'll be back next week. And this half hour is sponsored by Back on Track Products. Well, you know, we had our little pre-show meeting like we do every day before the show, and Jackie was there. And we got to the part where we talk about the song, and I said, well, pick a song out, and she did. And I said, well, you know the real reason we do the song, Jackie? And she said, well, I assume you just want to play a song. And I said, no, the song is there because it's strategically placed halfway through the show when we all have to go pee. And because you're doing a live show, you
you know, and it's early in the morning and you're drinking coffee and tea and that kind of stuff, it gets to a point about halfway through the show where we discovered that we had to run out and pee, take a pee break, and there's no time to do it. So that's why we put in the song. So all the songs have to be at least 3 minutes long, so it gives us time. And Jackie said at the beginning of the show today, I'm going to embarrass you, she said, I can make it an hour and a half without peeing. So the big question of the day now, Jackie, is did you make it through the song without having to run to the bathroom?
I didn't. I could have if I had to, but you know what? I knew I had my 3 minutes, so I figured I'll take advantage of it.
It just is this thing coffee. It's the coffee thing. And by the way, if Shauna drinks more coffee today, I pity anybody she's working with, including horses. Because, boy, oh, boy, she's revved up for 6 o'clock in the morning there in California. I wish I had her energy. My gosh. Well, our next guests up are here every Wednesday from thehorse.com. Usually Jamie introduces them because I'm hiding under my desk with my ears shut going, la, 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 la. But today I actually have to be actively involved. And we have Christy West with us today, who's with us every week with the horse.com segment called Horse Health Weekly. Sorry about that, Christy.
Not a problem. And where's my jingle?
Oh, darn it. I have this thing about forgetting your jingle. I'm just going to have to load it up and leave it there because I have this thing about forgetting. Jackie, sing a jingle quick.
No. Okay. You're going to have to load it up.
You two know each other, right? Don't you know Jackie?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Jackie, it's good to be talking to you this morning.
It's good to talk to you too, Christy.
And I'm really enjoying the visuals of Glenn under his desk. But, you know, I thought that the it sounded like the visuals of Glenn under his desk from today was from him falling off of his
ball.
It pretty much was,
trust me. I learned an important lesson today. I learned an important lesson. Just be careful on your ball when you're tying your shoes. So,
I'm
looking at the topic today.
Here.
And it doesn't look like you're going to gross me out at all. By the way, I just want to tease this a little bit because here's my ADD kicking in. And I don't know that Dr. Jones is ready yet. So I want to tease this a little bit. Christy has been with us now since the beginning of the show, right? You guys were on at the very beginning.
Yep.
So that means it's been months. It's been almost 6 months that we've been doing this show every week together.
Am I about
and
to
we didn't. You just hold on there, Christy. You're not allowed to be part of this. And what we didn't know is that this mild-mannered Christy, who just likes grossing people out on the air and stuff, was really a daredevil at heart. And I'm not going to tell people what it is, but next week, Christy is our special guest at 9:30 on Wednesday to tell us about the secret life that she leads and how really wild and crazy this woman is. So it's our chance, my chance, mine specifically, next week on Wednesday to really put you on the carpet to talk about this thing that you do, which just blew me away. So, and I know when you asked yesterday, why are you having me talk about that? It doesn't have anything to do with horses. One is it's my chance to, you know, call you out. And second is it's just absolutely fascinating for anybody. So we're looking forward to talking to you next week about your hobby.
And, you know, with that kind of introduction, people's minds are going in all sorts of different directions.
I know, and that's the way I wanted it. I want them thinking all the wacky things that Christy might be up to. And let me just say, it doesn't involve horses. There's no horses involved in this because it would be dangerous if there were. So
those are two, I'll say, hobbies, vocations, something or other, that really just have no intersection whatsoever.
No, you know, probably somebody has tried, and it's not a good idea.
I would not recommend it.
No. So at that, we'll leave it go, and we'll welcome Dr. Jones to the show. Dr. Jones, you got me, no Jamie this week. You have to put up with me.
Oh, my goodness. I almost hung up.
Well, there's a saving
grace.
Just
put a cat under his feet. He'll go on his own.
Yeah, that would probably be worse. I don't know, you know.
There's a saving grace here, and that's a Jackie's here, too. So we're okay. You'll be safe. Hey, you guys are talking about something that's kind of important because it was brought up, and it even came up on our Facebook page, when we were talking about the Kentucky Derby over the weekend. Of course, there were some horses injured, and of course, you know, that brings up the people who really don't like racing and who are saying it's too dangerous and things like that. You know, I've personally seen more horses injured in our backfield just being horses than when we were actually doing something with them. So, but I want you to talk about this because I think it is very important to understand what happened and what it is.
Absolutely. And we wanted to talk, and that's exactly why we wanted to talk about fractures in sport horses. It's obviously a very timely topic. And, you know, happily, those two horses that were injured during the Churchill Downs meet, both are doing fine. They both had surgery. They both come through the surgery pretty well, according to all the early reports. But I thought it was a good opportunity to talk a little bit about what kind of fractures do occur in sport horses. And, you know, what can be, and we'll talk a little bit about what can be done with them and also some emergency treatment. Should you, you know, how might you recognize a fracture in your horse? Other than, you know, the really bad ones are a little more obvious, of course. But first of all, both of those horses suffered condylar fractures. And, Glenn, I put you on the spot. Do you have any clue what a condylar fracture is?
It's a broken bit. Am I close?
Okay. A broken bit?
Yeah, it's some kind of broken part. A broken bit. It's a broken bit of bone. Let me...
Not the bit you'd put in the horse's mouth. Okay.
No, that's not what I meant. I meant actually a broken bit of the horse. It's a part that's broken.
Okay, fair enough. Aaron, would you like to explain?
I got close, didn't I, Aaron?
Oh, really close, like the opposite side of the horse. But anyway... The condylar area is, you know, at the bottom of what people call the cannon bone, so down in the ankle area. And the condylar fractures are very common in the thoroughbred racehorses, only because of the way that the bone is made, the geometry of the bone. So rather than get into a big mathematical and physical physics-type discussion here, is that one condyle is a little bit different than the other one. And it has more of a tendency to be to fracture. I'm sure you know those kids that were more accident-prone when you grew up than others. So, you know, you kind of put it that way as some of those kids just are a little bit more accident-prone because of the way they're built.
Right, right. And, you know, and there are horses, obviously, whether they're racehorses or not, that are more accident-prone. We've owned some of those.
Mm-hmm.
For sure.
So now, it's actually... It's not, so it's a fracture, which means it's a complete break?
It can be a complete break, or it can just be a partial break, and they just screw back on, so basically attach back on a little deviation away from the main bone. So it would be like a flap of your soffit hanging down after a bad windstorm. You want to tack it back up kind of idea. I'm just trying to think of other analogies for people that have probably barns that had roofs. You know, the tin peeled back a little bit, you want to put that tin back on. Same idea as it could completely fracture all the way through, or it can stress fracture and only part of it is facing out. The worst part about it is it does go down into the joint. So the condyle does communicate with the fetlock joint, and that is where you'll see, you know, where they have to pay attention to arthritis and the cartilage damage that's done and things like that. So those horses are going to be on a very high maintenance to keep their cartilage intact so that they can have a sport life after surgery of some sort, whether it's go back to racing or go back to being some other sport horse. They want to make sure that they're sound to get around.
And are there any types of specific conformation issues that make a horse prone to that type of fracture?
They have not found that. They've just found, you know, there's a couple papers that have been presented at our AAP meeting that we have annually. Last one I remember was back in 2009, and it was just talking about the dynamics of the way the bone is shaped and how one condyle is more prone to being fractured than another.
Oh, gotcha.
And that's just the way it's shaped.
Sure. And these fractures, just because it has a condylar fracture doesn't mean that all the condylar fractures are the same either. Just for example,
exactly.
These two horses, they each have had condylar fractures. They were in different legs. And one of these horses, as they've already announced that he's going to be retired from racing, he'll probably have some sort of career afterwards, but his, you know, involved the joint a little bit more than the other, I believe. And so one of them got two screws to it, reattach that piece of bone. The other one actually needed a plate and screws. So, you know, they can be very different. There's a problem in the same area, but they can be very different as well in their implications for the horse's future career.
The other thing you have to keep in mind is, which leg is it occurring in? Is it a forelimb or a back limb? You know, the hind limbs carry a lot less weight, so they have more tendency to be a bit more forgiving, if you want to call it that, for recovery than the forelimbs. The forelimbs carry two-thirds of the horse's weight, so that, you know, that kind of a fracture up there will have a different outcome than a hind limb one will.
Of course. And there are a number of other kinds of fractures and, you know, and other bone problems that are sort of common in sport horses. You know, one of the first ones that you hear, again, often in race horses, but not always, is buck shins. Erin, can you tell us a little bit about those?
Yes, those aren't really true fractures. They don't have to go in and surgically put something back together. But it's more they feel the peeling away the periosteum from, you know, the front of the bone from heavy stress work. And a lot of times there's rest, there's the old-fashioned pin fire them to start up some sort of irritation. So it just depends on which veterinarian you talk to and what they recommend doing to those buck shins. I believe you have an article regarding that on thehorse.com that would probably clarify it a little bit better for everybody. Is that correct,
Christine? We do. We have actually a couple of articles on that, and some of these came from the American Association of Equine Practitioners Convention. A few years ago, Dr. Nunemaker presented at the time it was called the State of the Art Lecture, and it's a very good discussion of buck shins and why they occur, the response to initial training, as the horse's cannon bones literally change shape as a result of the training. You know, the horse's bones adapt to the stress of training and different kinds of training, just exactly the same way as your muscles respond to weight training. Okay, not exactly the same, but your bone will adapt to, you know, it'll thicken on that dorsal front surface to handle the stress that's being put on it with training. This is why they train, not just to teach them how to run around the track close to the rail, but to actually adapt their body, their bones, as well as their muscles and their cardiovascular system. And buck shins is just something that comes along with that training, with certain training regimens, certain types of stresses. But that article number, and I will put this up on the Facebook page as well.
Great.
If you just go to thehorse.com and search article 4066, or just type in thehorse.com/4066, you'll get to that article. And
the comment you made there, Christy, is very important that people understand that these horses that are being trained have to stay in training in order to compete well. It's just like a human athlete has to stay in training. They have measured the cannon bone's the easiest one for them to measure. They have measured the width of what they call the cortex, which is the outside of the pillar, if you want to call it, not the inside where the medullary cavity is, where our bone marrow is. It's the outside that holds up the leg and holds up the body, and they've measured that and seen that there has been an increase in the cortex with an increase in work. And the whole idea is for them to have that increase to withstand heavy work and a bigger body. So that's a good thing. That's what they're trying to do. And, yes, there are changes done on the cortex that bring buck shins in. Be like you and I getting a little sprain or, you know, an issue that lays us back for a little while, and then we start up again. We have to just take it easy. So it's very, very similar in the way humans, athletes, have to continually stay in work to keep everything strong and healthy, just like the babies and the thoroughbreds do. And they also did it, and I'm mentioning babies because they also checked the cortices of these babies who were pastured more than stalled, and they increased their cortex being out in the pasture just playing. So it's very, very recommended that they go out there and play and have a good time because they're strengthening up their bones.
Now, Dr. Jones, how long, let's say Arch, who just had, you know, the screws and pins and everything put in, how long will he be laid up before he's allowed to go out and play?
I'd like to defer to a surgeon on that one, but a lot of the because it depends on how much the fat-like joint was interrupted, the cartilage interrupted on that, and then, of course, his response to post-op care. Does he come out of it very beautifully and walk on the leg immediately? Is he still having a little bit of an issue? Do we have to inject the joint with some hyaluronic acid? So it kind of depends on that. I always like to defer to the surgeon on that rather than me as a general practitioner. But in general, a lot of those surgical care-type lamenesses is they have somebody on their back roughly in about 3 months on average. But whether they're just riding them at walk or doing a little trotting, they're not out there breezing them, that's for sure.
Okay.
Yeah, and looking at the long term, once it's actually healed, what is the prognosis for the likelihood of a re-injury? I know with a soft tissue, you know, tendons, ligaments, they're relatively likely to reoccur. Is it the same thing for a bone injury?
It depends on the bone injury. Some of them were traumatic in injury, like they caught their foot on the other leg, and that they, you know, unless they're clumsy enough to do it again, they're probably not going to have that problem again. If it's something dynamically wrong, like, again, go back to the physics and the mathematical geometry of the way the bone is structured, yeah, maybe they're going to have a propensity to do this again. So it's animal. Each animal is different in the way that they are made and the way that I would want to answer that.
So if a horse has a bone injury, let's use an example of gets a chip in his knee. Chip doesn't move. Everything's happy, happy.
Mm-hmm.
He gets all of the appropriate care, and he goes back to work. If that bone chip is exacerbated by the fact that this particular horse was back at the knees, he's got a much higher risk of having a re-injury because he was conformationally predisposed versus the random that bone was overloaded because he took a step in just the right fashion,
right,
and had a traumatic injury. That injury is less likely to reoccur because it was the random injury versus a predisposition.
Right.
Now, next question I have is, you can do bone scans to test bone thickness and density. Am I correct?
Yeah, you can. The bone scans are more, they pick up more, not the thickness and density, but they pick up more a stress fracture that we can't
okay.
see on radiographs
okay.
due to the amount of bone turnover. So what
okay.
a nuclear scan does is it has a phosphate binder to the radioactive material that's injected in the horse that goes to an area of high turnover. For example, in a baby, it would be their physeal area where they're growing. For a fracture, it'd be where the bone is trying to rebuild, but it's also being broken down at the same time because there's
okay,
a fracture present.
You just gave me a headache in three sentences, Dr. Jones.
Sorry.
Oh, my gosh. But the root of the question being, when you have a horse in work and you've got some symptoms that would go, there might be something going on in this area. We
mm-hmm.
can't nail it down to one particular thing. Is there a bone involved? Are there scanning techniques that can be used that can tell the trainer, the rider, the practitioner, ooh, we need to watch this. This is a fracture waiting to happen.
There are two diagnostic techniques that people can use nowadays. Nuclear scintigraphy, the bone scan, is one. An MRI all the way up to the ankle. You can even do it standing. There's a great article that came out in our journal that discussed doing standing MRIs on horses to watch for predisposing injuries in the ankle area of these young thoroughbreds.
But
and that's primarily what it's based off of young thoroughbreds.
To apply to a sport horse as well.
Yes, absolutely.
You know,
and that would be something we can bring it to my practice. I'm primarily a sport horse practice. I do have a little bit of racetrack, but not very much. I had two fetlock injuries this past year, hind fetlocks.
Really?
One is back in work and is lamer than when it started. And unfortunately, it's a winter client, so they're up north, and I'm not in touch with the horse, but just got the message yesterday. The other one is back in work and sound.
Hmm.
So same injury on both, but different outcomes
mm-hmm.
on both. Both warm bloods, too.
Interesting.
Yes. So, again, you could try to say across the board, this is how it is in life, but it doesn't always go that way.
Yeah.
That would be way too
real quick to just wrap us up. Could you give us just some quick ideas of what to look for if a horse may have a fracture, you know, any indicators and symptoms and what you would need to do as an emergency treatment until the vet can get there?
Yeah,
he walking on
what
three legs.
To today.
He'll be walking on three legs. Would that
yeah,
be a good indicator?
They'll be walking on three legs. They will definitely be very painful in that leg. They'll have heat and swelling if it's above the hoof. You can have a fracture of the coffin bone and not see the heat and swelling, and they'll be walking on three legs as well. X-rays would be taken by the vet, but before the vet gets there, I just say don't move them, or if you have to move them, get them into a trailer to move them if you have to go a long distance, or splint it up, meaning do your regular standing wrap, very, very supportive standing wrap, and you can do it on all four limbs or do it on just the two limbs that are affected, the one limb affected and the opposite limb that's not affected, There are splints that are can be made out of PVC. PVC is my favorite for splints, but you can use 2x4s if you're out in a trail riding incident, and that might be the only thing you have in your trailer, that kind of thing, to get them to a hospital. But, very little movement is always best, and then support of that limb. They always say the joint below and above the fracture has got to be immobilized. So hind limb fractures are toughest because it's hard to immobilize a hock, but you got to do the best thing you can for them.
Well, guys, we are plain running out of time. Christy, I'm sorry we stole your show today.
Not at all. We're talking about what I plan to talk about, so I'm
happy. Okay, good.
And I do want to let you know, too, we have as always, we have articles on thehorse.com on a lot of this stuff, and one in particular on splinting a fracture is number 11524. So, again, go to thehorse.com, search for 11524, or just type in thehorse.com/11524.
Well, thank you both. Thanks to Christy, and thanks for thehorse.com. And thank you, Dr. Jones, for taking time out. I hope that, with thousands of people listening to the show, that people do take away something from these shows. And I've been starting to also wanted to mention, I didn't even tell Christy this, I've been starting to put these segments over on Horse Tip Daily as well. Horse Tip Daily actually right now is our largest show, has the most listeners with tens of thousands of listeners every day. So we're starting to put these over there as well so that audience can also benefit and maybe learn something that helps save their horse someday by what we talk about here. Thank you both and have a great day.
Thank you. You too. Thank you.
All right. Bye,
Jackie,
guys.
Good talking to you.
Well, Jackie, I'll tell you what, that is an interesting segment we have this week, and I got through it. I can eat lunch today.
Yay.
Oh, yeah, I think you're safe. But we could go back to the tick conversation if you want.
No, you were getting grossed out by that. I mean,
that's true.
That's one that was doing you in. So do you have plans to take this pony of yours and do some showing? Or?
I do eventually. We've just been kind of having lots of fun playing around. What I'd really like to do is in my area there's a really good series of mini trials, which are the really, really low-level eventing type where all in one day you do your dressage, your cross country, and your show jumping, and the jumps are only like 18 inches high. We have an organization that does those in my area, and I think that would be really fun, or to try some hunter paces. And those are both something really new to me, but I think that Ace would really love them because he loves to get outside and he really likes to jump, and he's relatively laid back, so I don't think he's going to do anything too crazy.
I think you'd actually like hunter paces. We have never talked about them on the show here, Jennifer, have we? We'll have to get somebody on to talk about hunter paces.
Yeah, there aren't very many of them around, and you're right, they should get a little press, so we'll have to contact perhaps the folks over at Woodford since we're buds with them now. Because hunter paces are such a wonderfully informal, family-friendly way to go out and go to a show or compete. That's a good idea.
Yeah, you'll have to tell me again, because all I know about them is that they're trail rides with jumps that are timed, but not as crazy as cross country and eventing.
That's right. And they're kind of a low-key fox hunting thing is where they, I think, they derive from. Did they, Jennifer? Okay. Was kind of from the fox hunting side of things?
Yes. A hunter pace, the hunter part of hunter pace is as in fox hunter. The whole competition was invented for persons and horses who fox hunt to do something in the off season when fox hunting wasn't happening.
Okay. We'll definitely have to get somebody on to talk.
I don't think
there's
a national hunter pace association or anything.
Yeah.
It's not an FEI.
That would
sport.
Be perfect for me because I don't have the guts to do fox hunting or cross country, and neither does Ace. So that might just be right up our alley.
There you go.
It's always important to know when your horse has the guts to do what you want to do. That's kind of important, too. It keeps you on the horse that way. Hey, I wanted to mention, too, something else from our Facebook page. Rick Connolly posted about, did you guys know, this one's blowing me away and something certainly we've never talked about the horse plowing championships?
Never heard of it.
No. See, I hadn't either. Apparently, there's horse plowing championships where they get together and they give them a little section of land and they have to plow for points and you get the best, most points you win, but I guess it's how pretty you plow and how straight you plow and all that stuff. Who knew that there were horse plowing championships? And he, Rick actually posted a picture of a plowed piece of ground that won a horse plowing championship. So if you want to see what that's like, you can check it out. I never knew, Rick. This is brand new to me. Horse plowing championships. And he posted a picture from the Ohio State Horse Plowing Contest held in mid-April. Well, there you go.
Huh. Who'd have thunk?
You know, if we could put a hearse behind the plow,
we'd have a real thump down. That's like the cross country of driving, or the eventing.
That's right.
Three phases.
That's right. Well, Jackie, this has been a lot of fun. I certainly appreciate you joining us here this morning, and it's been so much fun to actually have you on the air with us. I get to talk to you all the time, but never on the air. You did terrific. I have something for you. This is how well you did today.
You only gave that to me, Glenn, because I was nice to you.
You were. You were nice to me the entire day.
I didn't pick on you at all.
Hey, I did see that you wrote
next time.
You wrote an article on regarding horses about the Kentucky Derby. So will you be writing one about the next race?
Oh, sure. My mom yells at me if I don't because she likes to go on and see who all of the horses are.
Well, remind everybody what the next race is.
The next race is the Preakness.
Gagasus, half horse, half man with beer in hand. He strolls the infield best.
Gotcha.
1/16 miles there. You got it. You got it.
The only reason I brought that up
Maryland.
Is I wanted to play the thing. I don't care. I just wanted to play it. I just had to get you to say Preakness so I could play it because that's the only time Jamie allows me to play it. And she absolutely
Well, there.
Hates
I played
it,
along so. Just to make you happy, Glenn.
Oh, thank you very much, Jackie. I really appreciate it. You made my day. No, we
I was
do
trying to get around it and just couldn't.
So what's your next blog post about? Being a talk show host, a superstar?
Oh, actually, yeah, it probably is. And what was the one I mentioned earlier? Oh, the two kinds of riders, those that have fallen and those that will. I kind of liked that idea. So that might have to be the next one.
Yeah, you'll have to get interviews with people who have fallen a lot, the clumsy ones, and then people who have never fallen, and then write the article so it can scare to death the people that have never fallen.
Or just encourage them as a part of being a good rider. Really.
Oh, there you go. Okay. Oh, maybe that's better. That's probably better, actually.
Yeah.
Be sure to listen to all the shows on the Horse Radio Network at horseradionetwork.com. The Western Radio Show just came out this morning, and Tammy and Alan actually have a talk, a conversation. It was a Mother's Day conversation with three generations of champion barrel racers. And I think that the grandma is actually in her late 80s, is from what I understood, and spunky as ever. She dominated most of the conversation. And then her daughter and her daughter's daughter, her grandchild, actually have all been National Finals Rodeo World Champion barrel racers. So he talks to all three of them at once, and it was kind of a fun, interesting conversation and a lot about family in that world. So you can check that out at horseradionetwork.com. Also, you can follow us on Facebook, as we talk about. We post a lot of things on Facebook, and our listeners do as well. And you can just search for Horses in the Morning. And we're on Twitter at Horse Radio.
And remember, if you missed the live show, you can always listen in to the recorded version on the Horses in the Morning website, on the affiliate websites, including regardinghorses.com, so stop by and visit me, or on iTunes. You never, ever, ever need to miss an episode. We will be back Thursday morning at 9 a.m. Eastern, and I believe you have Lisa Wasaki joining you to fill in for Jamie's co-host tomorrow.
Yep, that's great.
So we will be back then. Good chatting with you, Horse World. Say goodbye, Glenn.
Goodbye, Jackie. And everybody, have a safe ride today. Wear your helmet.